Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
My colleague Caoimhe Harney is with me here today because your dad unfortunately had to take a trip to A&E, Caoimhe. What happened?
Yeah, so Andrea, it was last Friday. I got a call when I was here in work and my brother said, look, dad was at the GP. He wasn't happy with whatever test they did. And they just said, as precaution, you may go into A&E. It was bank holiday Friday. Mm. That was what happened. So my brother drove him up. He got up there at around probably 1 o'clock. I knew myself, you know, when I got the call, my colleagues were saying, Caoimhe, do you want to leave? And I said, no, sure, I'll be there. You know, he'll be there for hours. Like, people know that going in. I said, no, sure, I'll be fine. I'll go in after work. So, yeah, he got in there at around 1 o'clock and my brother got him lunch and off he went. And then, look, I had things that I had to do that evening. So I went over to him at around 9 o'clock thinking, right, by the time I get there now, he might have been seen, he'd be ready to go home.
Well, he's there 9 hours.
He's been there
eight,
9 hours at this stage, right? So I give him a call and I say, well, like, what's going on? He said, look, I've just been brought in into the triage and then they took bloods and the guy said to him, look, don't hold me to this now, but it might be 2 hours till you get the bloods back. Yeah. So 2 hours, I was thinking 3 hours, you know, 12 o'clock, maybe 1 o'clock in the morning. So he got a bit of food. I brought him in a bit of food and then I said, okay, sure, I'll wait because what else would you do? Anyway, that was fine. 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning at this stage. Like, you're talking...
Still not seen.
Still not seen. Like, he had blood taken, but beyond the triage, no.
Yeah.
So you're 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock. And at this stage, like he's not alone. The place is packed. Mm. Like, it's...
Full, is it? Totally.
Full to the brim. It's like a zoo. There's drunk people everywhere. Like, there's drunk guys coming in, falling on top of sick people. There's security guards there. They're trying to manage it. Like, you know, you can kind of imagine they don't want to annoy the drunk people. So they're trying to contain them, but also then not aggravate them.
Yeah.
You know,
and this is an A&E in a Dublin hospital that we're talking about.
Exactly. So that went on. Of course, you can imagine my dad at this stage, like he wasn't actually physically ill, you know, he was just sent in basically as a precaution. So he's like, no, let's just leave. And at this stage, I was like, you've done 13, 14 hours. You may just wait now. Like, you stick it out. But like, you know, I just kept thinking the whole time I was there, like, first of all, there was water, but there was no cups. So people were sitting there like if they wanted a drink. They couldn't get a drink because there was no cup.
This is from like a water.
Yeah, just in general, like you're sitting there, like there's nowhere to get food at this stage. So like if you don't have your daughter like me or your brother or your sister or who any family member to come in and give you something, you're sitting in A&E for 16 hours with no food, no water. Now there's a vending machine. You can get a chocolate bar. Like, ironically enough, it wasn't actually working properly. There was one woman there and it wasn't working properly. Sometimes bars were coming out. Sometimes it wasn't. There was a little machine where you could get a coffee or tea. But like, other than that, there was nothing. Like, that's just all you can have.
Yeah. And while he was there in the A&E and, as you say, packed full to capacity with others there too, were there seats to sit on? Were there enough seats?
There were seats to sit on, but like, there was one guy who my dad had said had been there, came in around the same time as him. Mm. He was in very bad pain. He was bowled over. He was lying on the ground, trying to sleep on the ground. His wife was with him. Every now and again, he'd get up and he'd get sick into a bag. Now, I was there, all the time I was there, nobody came out and checked him. Nobody looked at him. Like, for all, like, you know, it was just, everyone was just left.
Yeah.
And I kept, you know, like that, dad and I were having a chat while we were there trying to pass the time. And he kept saying to me, like, you know, my dad is a farmer. He wouldn't leave an animal like that. You wouldn't leave, you know, we went through 2 months of lambing. If you see a yo that's sick or something, you go and you help them, you bring them in, you go back and check. You actually are coming home at night going, actually, I need to go back over. I need to go back out and check them. Like, not the case here. Like, it's honestly, like, for one of the richest countries in the world, like, I'm actually so angry about it for, like, all of these people who had to sit there for hours and hours. It's unbelievable. I was there till 6:30 in the morning in the end. So just me.
Yeah, you were there till 6:30. And presumably at that point, between 1 o'clock in the morning and 6:30 in the morning, was your dad, were others seen to at that stage?
Like, at this stage, like, things started to slow up. I didn't hear many names being called. So at that stage then, and I know they are all doing their best in there, but, you know, you kind of nearly have to fight your corner a small bit. So I did go up to the receptionist and I said, look, you know, I don't see anyone being called. I haven't heard any name being called in the last hour. Like, what's the situation? And she said, but people are being called. And I said, like, are there doctors actually on? Like, or what, you know? And she couldn't really tell me much. But after that, they made an announcement over, like, kind of an intercom thing and said, you know, the average wait time here, or the longest wait time, is 15 hours, 50 minutes or 55 minutes. At that stage, we were actually there about 15 hours.
Yeah.
So they were kind of letting people know that that's the case.
This is average.
Yeah. And I was talking to another woman who actually just happened to be from down the road from us at home. And she left after about 5 hours because we had told her we were there for, like, you know, dad had been there at this stage 15 hours. She left, but she had told me that when she went in and she was triaged, that they said, oh, well, don't worry. Look, you know, half of these people will leave. So you're kind of sitting there thinking, are they kind of hoping that people just get fed up and go? But ultimately, where do they go? They just go home and it's a bank holiday.
Long enough.
Like, it's.
I can see some of the text, Caoimhe. This was unfortunate reality here, is your dad's experience and your experience over the weekend isn't isolated. Come to those messages in a moment. He did eventually get seen, didn't he?
Yeah. So then after they did the roll call, so when I spoke to that woman, they said the average wait was 15 hours or whatever. Then this nurse came out, and God love him, he actually had a security guard with him, because you can imagine now, like, people, I'd say,
attention,
are so annoyed. They haven't slept all night. So he has this security guard beside him and he's calling out the names. He's going around person to person asking, Andrea Gilligan, you know, are you here? Whatever. Yeah. So that's happening fine. And once that happened, he was then brought in and given a trolley. That was around 6:30 in the morning. At that stage, when he got the trolley, I said to the nurse, look, do you think he's going to see a doctor? Because if he's not, I'll go home and I'll get sleep. Because to be honest, at this stage, I'm exhausted.
Yeah, like, you're in from early.
I'm up at this stage 24 hours. And I kept thinking as well, like, sleep is used as a form of torture. Yeah. And, like, how would people not be, like, obviously it would never be okay to assault someone. But, like, you can imagine when you're sick and you're tired and then you're sitting on a hard chair or trying to lie on the ground. Like, at one stage, my father did actually lie down on the ground because he was so exhausted. Not because he was in pain or anything, but he, like, you're tired. So he got the trolley at 6:30. I left, drove back to Kildare, went to sleep, woke up at 12:30, rang him. Still hadn't been seen by a doctor.
Still hadn't been seen. And at this point now, we're at 24 hours later, basically.
So when he did finally see a doctor, it was 24 to 25 hours later.
Yeah.
Like, in one of the richest countries in the world.
And you can see why people would be deterred from going to A&E. Listener here, Caoimhe, listening to you today, says, you know, look, I find the A&E system just shocking. I always feel we don't shout about it enough. 8 years ago, my own mum spent 3 days in a trolley in a corridor, people pushing past her, no proper toilet facilities. There weren't even lights turned on. Again, like Caoimhe mentioned, no proper food either. I feel prisoners are often treated better, says this texter. Stephen McMahon from the Irish Patients Association is with us here on the line, Caoimhe, this afternoon as well. Unfortunately, that Caoimhe story isn't isolated, Stephen.
It's not, Andrea. And first of all, I'd like to congratulate Caoimhe for carrying this forward and going public on it, because it really raises a serious issue about so many patients' experiences in the emergency departments. And it's not just in the emergency departments, it filters out into many other areas within the system. But just looking what Caoimhe had said there, that not to be seen by a doctor within 24 hours, to me, is totally unacceptable and also raises serious issues about patient safety. I'd be concerned about someone going out, albeit with the security person, to do a roll call to see, well, how many people have actually left that we were expecting to be here, and then to sort of maybe, perhaps, reorganise how the rest of the patients will be treated. But I think the important thing here is for Caoimhe that, you know, she and her dad especially deserves, you know, a formal explanation from the hospital. She hasn't named it, and that's fine. But I think that they need to examine in detail what she has said in this interview from the point of view of the experiences she had and her father had and the lack of resources about having food and comfort and so on. That really is just not acceptable. And then the whole issue is, on a slightly wider scale, Andrea, is that, you know, delay has become normal in our healthcare system. Mm. I can go through areas like, you know, diagnostics. The waiting lists have gone up hugely versus last year, and certainly patients waiting more than 12 months. This morning, there were 41 patients in the emergency departments on trolleys waiting more than 24 hours. You know, we had 500 patients delayed because of transfer of care, and they'd surge capacity of 566 beds. Now, your listeners might think, oh, surge capacity, that's extra beds. It's not. It's beds taken from around the hospital to fill the need in the emergency departments. And that means patients perhaps who are waiting on for operations can't have them because the bed isn't available. And on it goes. So until we really face up to the fact, you know, that there is this culture and acceptability of delay, we're not going to deal with the problem because it's normalised.
Yeah, and I could sit here and, you know, read, you know, any amount of messages and WhatsApps and emails coming in already from listeners tuned in and hearing Caoimhe's story today, Stephen, on the programme. But it just seems to be that, I mean, this just kind of seems to be general practice across the country from what I can see. We've contacted the HSE in relation to Caoimhe's case. As I mentioned, it's an accident and emergency based in County Dublin. But this just seems to be happening all over the country then.
Well, it does and it can. And I mean, you know, there's no doubt about it that staff and the system are working under enormous pressures. Over the bank holiday weekend, Andrea, we had a case of someone who needs urgent neurological surgery. And it turns out that, you know, having contacted the hospitals that are involved in it, that they too are under pressure to find a bed for this patient to have urgent brain surgery to relieve a condition that they unfortunately have. And so, you know, we have the situation here that, you know, on one level, we think we have a two-tier health system, which we do have. But I know for a fact you have a very large listenership out there. And about half of those people would not have private health insurance. Mm. And out of that half, Andrea, out of that half of your audience, perhaps, that don't have private health insurance, one in three are on some public waiting list or other. And that is the ultimate barometer. The patient's emergency is the system's routine. And until the system realises and has some empathy with the situation the patients find themselves in, you know, it's very difficult to get action to find the improvements that are needed in the system. Like, for instance, Caoimhe was talking about simple things like having something for the water cooler. Yeah. If you're waiting in there for hours and hours and hours and you can't get access to food or water or have a comfortable seat that one can sit in while they're waiting, you know, that is not really patient-centred care.
Well, if you can't even get a paper cup, you know, or the plastic glass to get some water from the water cooler. I mean, sure, like, people are going in to get blood tests done or presumably urine samples taken and all that kind of goes with the sort of typical triage that you have in hospital. I mean, sure, it's in no way going to help their condition.
I think, look, this isn't really what... I think most people are fair-minded, that this isn't an issue of trying to find blame, be it political or organisational or whatever. But really, it's just recognising that there's a problem there, and it's translating that awareness of it into timely operational change. Because everywhere you look, you know, for diagnostics, for treatment, for rehabilitation, there are 200 patients waiting to get transferred into the National Rehabilitation Hospital, and they could wait almost up to 5 or 6 months for that to happen. And part of that problem is, you know, is the availability of beds, obviously. And then waiting for medicines. You heard Claire Byrne on this morning about it, people waiting for years to get new medicines. So it's really, Yeah, sorry.
No, you're okay, Stephen. I was just, I mean, it just sort of has, highlights the state of where we're at the moment with the health services across the country. I just want to bring this listener's email to you. I had to take my non-verbal adult intellectually disabled daughter who can't understand why needles are even being stuck in her in the first place. She often pulls out drips, tubes, etc. I had to ask for help and supplies to wrap her arm. She was screaming as she thought she was being attacked. I was told we don't have anything like that. A&E in triage was absolutely an horrific experience. She was on a trolley like this as well, screaming for 5 hours with me trying to hold her arms down so that she wouldn't pull out the drips for the blood, etc. Eventually she was sedated. I just thought the whole experience is totally wrong. There was nothing to eat. I was just so shocked, to be honest, with what we experienced. And this too was in a large Dublin hospital. Yvonne has got in touch to tell us, my father-in-law was in A&E for 3 days on a chair for most of it before they actually found him a bed in St. Vincent's. He was very sick at the time. It only happened in January. He's still in hospital today and he too is pretty sick. But to think of him sitting on the chair for 3 days. Another listener tells me, my wife went through A&E in Dublin on Monday, just bank holiday Monday. She is still on a hospital trolley today and we too have full health insurance. I mean, the problem, Caoimhín, in your own experience, and you shared your dad's story with us eloquently here on the show today, but like, you can see how this would deter, you know, you or other family members from going back through an A&E again.
Well, like, look, I did actually say, oh, you probably shouldn't have gone in on a Friday of a bank holiday. And like, that's not the mentality that we should have. Like, if you're genuinely really sick, yeah, you should be going into hospital.
Or you're getting a referral, like, from your GP like that.
Yeah, you're getting a referral. But at that stage, like, really and truly, like, my dad has health insurance. Health insurance doesn't move you up the list in A&E. You know, some people had said, oh, you could have gone to Blackrock or you could have gone to the Hermitage or whatever. He didn't do that. And like, it was too late by the time I had got there. But that's not good enough. Like, you shouldn't have to have health insurance. And even when you're in there, basic things like water, people coming around to say, are you okay? Like, the fact that not one person came out for 16 hours to ask how anyone was, not my dad, but anyone in there, is unbelievable to me.
Stephen, maybe just on a final point, and I can see more and more messages coming in now, and I do want to try and get to those as well. But Caoimhín is right about that. Like, the A&E experience, whether you're fortunate enough to have private healthcare insurance or not, I mean, like, sure, it just seems to be the same regardless of what kind of insurance you have, if any.
Oh, well, that's the point, you see, and this is why people feel that they have private health insurance. Well, I'm grand, like, you know, I'll get timely access when I need it. But we never know the time or day or hour that you suddenly have an emergency. And as I say to you, the patient's emergency is the system's routine. And unfortunately, the routine is one of delay, like a culture of delay. And I think that, you know, certainly the Irish Patients Association would welcome any feedback from your listeners about their personal experiences. Because unless we speak out about them, the system is not going to learn. And at the end of the day, patients have rights to be treated with dignity, respect, to have access to care when it's needed. And I'm very worried about patients making the kind of decision that was just mentioned there, that, ah, sure, I'll be grand, I'll leave it for another day. That's not the situation when you need to get urgent care, and particularly if your GP is referring you to an A&E. Don't think of walking out because the time is gone. Ask questions there and just be courteous to the staff. You know, like, there's no harm in you being assertive, and maybe there's somebody beside you. I think Caoimhín mentioned there that, you know, that there are other people around you that may not have anybody with them, to just ask them, how are you getting on, or do you want to ask someone a question for you?
You said complain to who? Sorry, contact yourselves. Is it Stephen at the Irish Patients Association?
Sorry, the Irish Patients. So info@irishpatients.ie. We may not be able to solve all the problems, but we can certainly make some effort to ensure that their voices are heard. Because unless there's platforms as this very large segment in the programme has given to it, you know, the system is not going to learn, and we must change change this culture of delay that seems to permeate everywhere. We know what the problems are. Let's try and work together to have the issues sorted out.
Yeah, Caoimh is right. We shouldn't, people shouldn't, patients shouldn't, you know, just sort of tolerate and accept this as kind of being standard practice. It certainly shouldn't be the norm, but it seems today from the messages on 087 1400 106 that it is. Listener says, I was treated as an emergency patient in A&E in January. There were at least a dozen people who were there either drunk or had obvious mental health issues. If those people were treated separately in a different unit designed for that, perhaps the crazy waiting times in the accident and emergency departments might reduce overnight. Caoimh, I hope your dad's doing okay. Thanks.
Yeah,
for...
he's grand, and I have to say that because he'll kill me if I don't. He's absolutely fine.
Good, good. Well, I hope he's doing okay, and he is right to go and get checked as well, as you say, on the advice of the GP. Thanks to you for sharing that experience with us on the programme today. Stephen McMahon there from the Irish Patients Association. Do take Stephen's advice. Like, drop them an email at the Patient Association and share your experience with them. And when you're doing that, if you feel up to it, you can send that email on to us here at Lunchtime Live at newstalk.com, and we too will continue to highlight your stories. Not going to change if people don't know about it. Listener tells me the problem is there's just far too many minor injury clinics across the country. There should be 16-hour clinics with some diagnostics to take a lot of the pressure off the A&Es as well. And this listener says, I'm a doctor and I just want to say, in terms of patient-centred care, I'm a doctor and there's no facilities for breastfeeding mums at all. The mothers are running in and out to the car park facilities often to feed their babies, and I too just want to flag that. Keep those stories coming in.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on News Talk. Conversation that counts.